Hello and welcome back to another episode of Open Floor. I'm Andrew Sharp, and on the other line, Ben Golliver. What's up, man?
Not too much, Andrew. We're going to do a big roundup of all the free agency stuff that happened over the long weekend. But before we get to all that, I'm sure you've got a cute little script of all the different storylines we're supposed to go through. But throw that to the side for a second. We got to talk about the worst decision since the decision. Move aside DeAndre Jordan. Move aside Kevin Durant. There is a new prince in town. It's Gordon Hayward. That was such a mess yesterday, Andrew, and I'm so fired up about it.
So are you like genuinely fired up about it, or is this a bit? Because I can't really tell.
No. This is not a bit. This is not a bit. Because look, if there's anything I'm an expert at, it's 2,100 word stories that just completely missed their audience. And that's what we had yesterday with Gordon Hayward. Now, look, let's just put this into perspective. DeAndre Jordan, his big sin or his crime was just cluelessness. I mean, he's being dragged around by the hand by all these different people, just kind of competing. He just wasn't in charge of the whole show. Ultimately, I think he settled on the right decision.
So you don't blame DeAndre? Because I would say DeAndre is the gold standard for NBA screw-ups in terms of rollout for free agency.
Let's be clear. I blame them all. I'm just saying that his crime was cluelessness. You can give him a little bit of a pass because he just wasn't really in control. Now, Kevin Durant's crime last summer was being tone deaf, of not really understanding how much he was going to hurt people, having been so inconsistent in what he had said up to the decision. Unlike you, KD hater number one, my problem wasn't what his choice, right? Yeah. I was okay with him going to Golden State. I understood it. I just thought the really lame Players Tribune letter that just didn't come across in his voice, that didn't explain his perspective, left all those fans just kind of hanging, right? Uh-huh. And it didn't seem like he necessarily had a plan for the rollout. It was just sort of like, well, I made this big call. We're in the Hamptons. Throw out 400 words.
It was a mess. It was a mess. Like, talking to people after the fact, like 9 months later, it sounds like it was kind of just chaos out there. So it was fine, though. Whatever. Not holding
it
against KD.
But this was definitely... definitely, definitely, definitely worse. Okay.
Yesterday was amazing. I really enjoyed it. I think it's just a bummer that he wound up. I was on a high when I thought there was about 45 minutes there where it looked like the Celtics were really about to get screwed. And I was like, it was like a drug. I just kept refreshing my phone and every tweet, every subsequent update made me happier and happier. And then it's kind of lame that he ended up going to the Celtics after all. I think it would have been
Andrew,
a legendary timeline had it not ended in Boston.
It wasn't 45 minutes, Andrew. This was 5 hours. And he's not a 17-year-old kid pulling the switcheroo of the baseball hat at the freaking commitment to a college signing day press conference. This is a guy who's signing up for a 9-figure contract, who's trying to elevate himself and capitalize on this opportunity with the entire NBA world watching him. And he completely botched it. Here's what really bothered me. He had a plan, okay? He was torn up. You could tell by the writing, which again, from the Players Tribune, not very good, certainly needed to be edited. There's no question about that. Mm-hmm. They need to leave this to the professionals. He had a plan, though. His plan was try to let the Jazz fans down easy, right? He gave them some morsels. He held his meeting in San Diego. That was a huge red flag to me. As soon as you've got the owner's widow on a flight to San Diego to meet you on neutral ground after you've just visited Miami and Boston, huge red flag. You've got Utah bending over backwards, trading for Ricky Rubio because they know they're not sure they're going to be able to keep George Hill. So they've got a point guard in place, taking care of Joe Ingles, his buddy and his agent's homie. They had the plan from the Jazz side, and Hayward had basically leveraged all of these things by kind of playing hard to get and having these Celtics rumors floating for months. And yet, his primary concern with his Players Tribune essay was not explaining what he wanted to do in Boston, how he wanted to take his game to the next level, why he wanted to reunite with his basketball surrogate father, Brad Stevens, why he wanted to have a better opportunity at All-NBA, All-Star recognitions. All these are completely valid reasons. His primary concern was basically expressing gratitude and almost trying to, you know, let those guys down easy. That was not what happened. The plan did not match the reality. He goes right out there.
I'm going to cut you off. I don't know. I still can't believe that you're seriously this fired up about the execution of the decision, because it none of it really matters. And also,
it matters.
There's no way if, like, someone in Gordon Hayward's position can't win. Like, I think he was doing his best to win when really, and not win, but like win public favor by saying, look, thank you guys. The years in Utah really meant a lot to me, but I need to move on for a variety of reasons. Like, I don't think there's anything he would have said yesterday that would have not come off as sort of,
But look, here's why. He's trying to let them down easy. That's his plan. But instead of just running with it once he gets scooped by Chris Haynes and ESPN and like 15 other outlets in the immediate aftermath of that, once he gets scooped, instead of just being like, well, I got scooped. Here's my Players Tribune letter. Here's what we had ready to go. Let's just go ahead and put it out and we're done here. He holds them in a torture chamber for 5 hours. Yeah. He's got their hearts in his hand. He's just kind of spinning them around, just waiting to crush it. And then finally he decides, okay, he's ready. He's poured out his 2,000-word essay that no one's going to read because they see the headline, thanks, Utah, and it just rubs them the wrong way. I just feel terrible for Jazz fans. They didn't need to have their hearts broken twice. They certainly didn't need to do it in this manner. And newsflash to Gordon Hayward, you're not this good. Okay, you're a fake superstar. You're a top 20, top 25 guy. And guess what? The Celtics are fake contenders too. Okay?
Oh, Gordon Hayward, here we go. Let's get into the meat of the pod. I don't give a shit about the Players Tribune.
Hold on. I'm not done. I'm not done. Fake superstar, fake contender, fake scoop. Okay? You're not going to beat LeBron James if you get swept by Chris Haynes, period.
Okay. Good. Nice rant. I'm feeling it on the other coast. The heat is hitting me in New England. I'm on the Cape right now. Listen, I'm with you 100%. I don't understand exactly why they couldn't just say, all right, well, the news got leaked somehow. Let's turn this into a after the fact Players Tribune article explaining the decision, like, or thanking Utah. It was really weird to try and preserve the scoop for Players Tribune, and then also he didn't really acknowledge like the role, how crazy it was in the story. Which, considering it was delayed 5 hours, it would not have been hard for them to just like throw together a paragraph acknowledging how crazy like the actual 4th of July news got, but. Such is life. I have no idea how the editorial process works over there or what kind of weird deals are agreed to, or like I don't understand what happened. I do.
Yeah, they clearly had to protect the exclusiveness of the content of the scoop, and I think that's why they came out and pushed back so hard, the agent did, but it just completely undercut his entire message. That's why he looks bad. And you know, this goes back actually to one thought I had, and this is a little bit more rational. I realize I might have been on 11 there to start. So during the playoffs, Gordon Hayward balled out against, especially against the Clippers. Not quite as effective as Golden State in the second round, but you know, he balled out against the Clippers. He was not ready for the attention. When he got on the podium, he was afraid. He was timid. He didn't have anything to say. He was bland. So if you want to be the superstar, if you want to take the next level in your career, and he should, because when you're looking at the Eastern Conference, Paul George bails, Jimmy Butler bails. I mean, he is in prime position to be, you know, potentially all NBA second team once he has that, you know, Boston hype machine behind him, right?
Right.
They should be in the Eastern Conference Finals. I mean, you look at these other teams treading water, Washington treading water, Toronto's treading water. A lot of these other, you know, third tier teams are falling back to earth. He is in a great spot to blow up huge. Is he ready for it? Because July 4th said he is not ready for it because he was not ready to roll with the punches once he got scooped. He did not have, you know, he referenced in his article about his inner circle. I don't know if that's like his Star Wars, his Warcraft guild or exactly what that is, but he had leaks. he was not ready for this big moment. This is not a seamless rollout. He looked clueless. And this was the first time a lot of casual fans have ever heard of him. That's part of the reason why he's leaving Utah. Utah is not the place to take that next step if that's what your goal is. He botched it. I thought he looked terrible. You're going to say, oh, it doesn't matter. He arrived at the correct conclusion eventually. I do understand that. I think that will wind up carrying the day, but I'm never going to forget how he played this. I thought it was terrible, horrible ending to his Utah tenure, and I'm going to hold it against him. I still am a little bitter at both DeAndre Jordan and Kevin Durant for how they handled theirs. I thought this one was definitely worse.
Okay, all right. I'm going to take you down from 11. Let's get you back to like an 8 or a 9 because I don't know where this is coming from. DeAndre is a separate thing. That was a true circus for like, I guess it was maybe 48 hours. I mean, it lasted more than a day and it was really pretty fantastic. But I think even most basketball fans look back on that lovingly. And I think when I remember Hayward's rollout, I will remember like just I loved it. The chaos was fun. And it's also kind of appropriate that by the end of it, it was sort of anticlimactic when he went to the Celtics, because the Celtics in general feel a little anticlimactic to me. And True. We should talk about the Celtics summer, because I have a lot of conflicting emotions about this and different ways to read it. I think, objectively speaking, they are in great shape. I mean, this was a big win getting Hayward. I mean, had they not gotten Hayward, you and I were prepared to come on and talk all kinds of shit about Danny Ainge and the 2 years of Celtics rumors that we've endured. But Hayward sort of is at least helps them save face a little bit. I wanted to record a pod on Monday. I'm glad that we didn't. I was pretty turned up after the Paul George thing. But I don't know. How do you feel about the Celtics right now?
Well, here's the key timing element to me was they had to do something this summer because of Isaiah's contract. If you wanted to add one or two stars, this was the time to do it. If you really wanted to get into that super teams race. I think that all of the pushback trying to slander Indiana for their Paul George terms and why didn't you just hand Paul George to Boston, the offer was so much better and all that, I think that's really overdone. That is still on Danny to make that deal happen one way or the other. He has every asset and every trick in the book to just blow Indiana away if he really wanted Paul George. Clearly he didn't. So let's not throw Indiana under the bus for that. We can blame Indiana for the package they ultimately took, but Boston is just as culpable in that failed trade.
Yeah.
I think if you have the choices, though, Gordon Hayward for 4 years with a player option, Jimmy Butler for 2 years, Paul George for 1 year, to me, those players are similar enough in talent that you'd rather have Gordon than the other two. So that's a huge win for Boston. And their flexibility, like you mentioned, is still pretty open-ended. I just think that this was the summer to get two. And that's why I'm disappointed. They needed to get both because they're in position. Had they gotten that big four, they could push Cleveland. They could push LeBron straight out of Cleveland.
Oh, yeah. I think if they had gotten that big four, they would be favored to make the finals, right? I mean, and not only that, I think they would have been in a good spot the hypothetical Celtics roster would have been a much more credible threat to the Warriors than I think the Cavs are right now. And that's not to say that they would have beaten them. And that's also not a reason to go all in on 1 year of Paul George. But I think for me, a lot of this comes back to the Fultz trade. I don't think that, if you're planning on rebuilding into the 2020s, I don't know why you give away a player like Fultz. And I don't think that Tatum is on the same level as Fultz. Likewise, something that you said, I don't think that Hayward is in the same class as Paul George and Jimmy Butler. And I think that's where a lot of the disagreements about the Celtics summers sort of originate, is a lot of people are looking at this and say, well, look, there wasn't much separation between Markelle Fultz and Jason Tatum. So Danny traded back, picked up an extra lottery pick, and that was smart. It was brilliant, whatever. And the Hayward and Paul George thing is the same deal. It's like two superstars. One, you would have had to mortgage the future or whatever. One, you get for nothing without giving up anything. And I just, like, if you're maxing out Hayward and Al Horford and then potentially paying Isaiah, that team's not going to be, that's like a pretty low ceiling for a team with three max guys on it.
Yeah, I guess my counter, and this would probably be Boston's counter too, is that the ceilings around the Eastern Conference are all collapsing so hard and so fast that their low ceiling, quote unquote, could easily be the highest ceiling in the conference for the next 5 years, especially if LeBron leaves, right?
So
they're sort of, to me, they're winners by default almost. It's sort of like everybody else lost more than they did. They didn't achieve their best case scenario, but they did achieve a strong scenario. You know, you can't give them worse than an A- for the summer, the way that it's played out to me. And I'm looking around at Toronto, and there's no way I'm giving them anything close to an A. Same thing with Washington overall. I mean, just in terms of the amount of talent they're adding. So from that standpoint, Danny's slow play probably deserves more credit than I was willing to give it, especially 2 days ago when, like you said, we were ready to torch him for just striking out on everybody. But even, you know, a month or 2 months ago, because things have collapsed really fast. You know, in baseball, they call the majors, like, call the show, right? And then there's the AAA. To me, the Western Conference is the show. I think we should just call it that. I mean, you look at how much talent has been added.
Look,
there. Like,
there's
Hayward,
no question,
is the only
the
guy who was
AAA.
Smart enough to bail. Yeah. No, Hayward was the only one who was smart enough to bail. Like, all these other guys are rushing into the thickets, right? Paul Millsap, I love that fit in Denver. Good luck. Like, you're still pushing hard to make the playoffs. You know, same thing with Oklahoma City. Paul George, like, that could work. I mean, that's a huge, like, eye-opening move. That could also backfire real bad. He could be back on the trade block in February. I mean, that's also a possibility. I know you've got your doubts about the Chris Paul and James Harden fit. I mean, when we're looking at that kind of aggregation of talent and we're still able to say, like, this doesn't guarantee you anything in the Western Conference, but then we go out east and it's like Horford and Hayward, pencil them in for 55 wins. It's a joke, man. It's a double standard.
Well, yeah, and I guess I just would be so – I would be a lot more on board with what the Celtics are trying to do had they just grabbed Fultz. I don't think Jason Tatum is good, and I think you only – like, the point of the Nets picks is to get the guy. Fultz could have been the guy. Jason Tatum could not have been, or probably isn't going to be. And the other thing is not putting, like, Jaylen Brown on the table in a Paul George trade is crazy to me. Like, Jaylen Brown's not ever going to be more than your – fourth best player or maybe third best player. And if you like, part of the reason you build a culture like the Celtics have is to say, look, like, we're gonna take a chance on Paul George, and giving up Jaylen Brown and a couple like low first round picks would have been nothing, and it probably would have been enough to get the deal done. And like, I think if you're the Celtics, you gotta bet that bringing Paul George in for a year will be enough to sell him on the future there versus like going to join a 30 win Laker team. So, well, it's,
here's my one thing on the Paul George for Boston. Do you agree there's a pretty greater than zero chance that Paul George does not make it through the whole season in Oklahoma City? Because to me, I'm not sure how well that pairing is going to work. And if you're Oklahoma City and you start to get the vibe like, we're not going to be able to re-sign him. We took our shot early in the season. They didn't just gel. You know, Westbrook and George didn't gel right off the top. They're kind of treading in that 6-7-8 you know, mix in the West. And now you're staring down the barrel of Paul George leaving for nothing. To me, Sam Presti is going to immediately try to get something for Paul George. He's going to turn around and say, hey, Houston, I know you're always down to trade for stars. Like you love pointing out, Daryl Morey's superstar thirsty. Let's try to get a Paul George trade going. Hey, Boston, we know you were looking at Paul George for a year. Why not try to, you know, put something together there? I mean, I think Sam Presti is much more likely to trade Paul George to Boston than Indiana was, based on the reports of kind of how that negotiation went down. And same thing for Houston. If Paul George ended up in Houston for the playoffs, would that surprise you at all? It wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah. Well, that's a good transition. I don't really want to talk that much more about the Celtics, but we should talk. I mean, because we haven't talked since the Paul George trade. I don't think that he is going to be dealt. I think that Presti is all in on this for the next year, and I think if we make it through the summer without Russ signing an extension, then basically they're going to take this team as far as they can go and then like blow it up in next June or July.
Yeah. The Oklahoma City thing has so many questions, but I think crazily enough, the Indiana side might have more questions than the Oklahoma City side. Like, the best defense I've heard for what they were thinking was that they just loved Oladipo because he went to IU. Like, that was, they just like had to have him for whatever it is, like $84 million over four, which a contract that's just starting. And I guess the one benefit of their trade package of guys like Oladipo and Sabonis is those are not guys who are going to be able to have any leverage in terms of trying to get out. So like, at least they're kidnapped. They're like hostages there in Indiana. Like, there's not anywhere where they can go and like screw you up. But if that's the baseline for a trade package for a certified all-star top 15 guy in the league, that is really, really tough. And if the best sales job you can have is like having Hoosier night at the arena and, you know, selling a few extra Oladipo jerseys to the alumni group, that is tough, man.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say. I have no idea what they were thinking, and it, mostly in doing the trade then, because I think you could have tried to squeeze Boston a little harder now, like a week later. And, you know, Oladipo is rough. That's a rough sell. Like, I think it's a win for Oklahoma City just dumping that deal and moving on from the Victor Oladipo era. And that's the first red flag. Sabonis, I'm not a huge fan of. There are like a lot of people around the league were really high on him coming into last season and even like midway through last season. He never really shot that well. He's another guy who I studied closely because he was on my fantasy team, and he just like never really took that next step. He was getting good minutes and just struggled for most of the year. Granted, we have to put an asterisk next to both of them because they were playing next to Russell Westbrook in a year when Russ just lost his mind. And so maybe that like their games can grow a little bit in Indiana. But look, it's a really bleak situation for the Pacers. I think no matter what, they were going to come out of this pretty bleak. I just think that this is a testament to like the value of management. And I wrote about this earlier in the week. Like, the East has lacked foresight for 15 or 20 years, and that's true for like 90% of the teams in the Eastern Conference. And the Pacers could have done really well in a Paul George trade had they just dealt him in February. I mean, granted, like, who knows what the real offers were? Like, the Celtics, they have their little birdies in the media, like, sort of seeding Twitter with various like trade proposals that may or may not have existed in February, but teams would have paid a lot more for George in February than they were willing to pay now.
Yeah, it's not even birdies, man. It's a flock. Like, they got a solid like three dozen people just spouting party lines every single time there's a new twisted turn involving the Celtics. It's kind of sad.
But you agree though on the Pacers. Yeah. Like, this is on Larry Bird saying, look, I like, he was not willing to really entertain trade offers in February.
For sure. I mean, that was a missed opportunity. And they had gone through so many different attempted retooling efforts, like, you know, moving on from Hibbert, moving on from West. Like, their talent, even when they were in the Eastern Conference Finals, was never actually that deep and useful. And so they were just constantly spinning their wheels, trying to bring in new guys to keep George happy. And it never worked. In terms of, like, can these guys coming in from Oklahoma City do better in Indiana? I mean, you're saying, okay, maybe Russell Westbrook's not holding them back anymore, but is Darren Collison really going to unlock like this amazing game of DeMontis Sabonis? You know, I'm skeptical there. And
I think the plan is to just tank and hope that Miles Turner is your guy. I mean, they've got him, I think, for the next 6 years with restricted free agency and whatnot. So they've got a little bit of time, but I mean, you got to just hope that, I mean, Oladipo is a guy who could maybe sell tickets, but won't be good enough to ruin tanking efforts. So in that respect, it's a win. Sabonis, I just don't see it at all. I mean,
I like him, but to me, his ceiling is like third big. I mean, that's sort of what he was going to come in, and that's fine. I mean, that's good for where they drafted him. I mean, he was a nice little pickup when you originally traded Ibaka, like a nice little sweetener type thing. But when you're not getting other picks, you really need him to hit in a big way for this trade package for Indiana. And your point on Oladipo's contract was right on. I mean, that was buyer's remorse, right? Like, they paid him expecting a big breakout. The breakout never came, and they're like, quick, let's just move this deal out the side door. I mean, it's not even really an asset when you're looking at the types of contracts that are going to guards this summer. You know, 4 full years at that number, you know, that's more than, even though he's only on that rookie extension, that's more than a lot of like established lead point guards took in guaranteed money this summer. So that's, you know, again, really questionable. They just must love Oladipo really in Indiana. They just have to love him. That's the only way you can explain this deal. But let's go back to Oklahoma City side, though. How does this work? I mean, tell me how you envision Russ and Paul George playing together, working together, because I am a little skeptical.
So I think it actually makes a lot of sense. I mean, I went back like 6 months ago. I was tweeting about Paul George, and I was tweeting about the best fits with Russ, because there aren't many guys you look around the league who would be like a clean fit with Russ in terms of guys who are great defensively, don't need the ball all the time to dominate on offense and to be effective. And I mean, Kawhi would be perfect, and Paul George is sort of the number two guy you would think of beyond, other than Kevin Durant, in terms of two-way guys who can sort of get their buckets efficiently. And I think that this is a good fit for both of them, because Paul George also becomes a lot better when he's not asked to handle the ball and to be like Kobe on offense. The worst versions of Paul George are when he is trying to be Kobe. And I think in Oklahoma City, like, he's not going to have to play that role. And this, they could be pretty good. I mean, we should talk about who the second best team in the West is.
Not them.
OKC is not entirely out of that question.
It's not them. I have some concerns. I mean, I get what you're saying in terms of he's kind of like poor man's Kevin Durant in terms of fit. He's definitely going to give you an all-around play. I think it's going to be a very good defensive team, especially if they bring back Roberson. You know, they add a guy like Patrick Patterson, who's kind of an overlooked but quality defender. They've got Adams in the middle. He's solid. They've got a lot of nice defensive pieces now assembled, a lot of interchangeable defensive pieces. My big question, though, late game offense. I mean, let's not forget, Paul George was trying to treat the Eastern Conference playoffs like a Gatorade commercial. You know, it's like demanding the ball from his teammates, forcing them to pass a ball. I mean, guess who had the most insane clutch usage rate in NBA history last year? Russell Westbrook. Is he going to be able to find the balance? And if he couldn't find the balance late in games with Kevin Durant year after year after year, who's an unbelievably efficient shooter, a much more efficient shooter and better shot maker than Paul George, how is it going to work when these two guys are you know, playing my turn, your turn basketball? I have much more concerns about this pairing falling victim to those kinds of struggles than I do about Westbrook and Durant back in the day. I kind of always apologize for those guys. You know, they're such good individual players. I was able to kind of look past it in most cases. I'm not sure you're going to be able to look past it with Westbrook and George together. I don't think that they're in the conversation for this number two team. I don't think that they have enough built up chemistry, cohesion. I'm concerned enough about their offense, their weapons.
You're right. That you know what? You're very right. I'm sorry for even raising the possibility of them being the second best team. You know who the second best team is going to be? It's going to end up being the Spurs again.
You sound
because
like you
CP3 and Harden is a really awkward fit personality wise, and they're on the court. D'Antoni is going to figure out a way to make it work, but both CP3 and Harden and Paul George and Russ seem kind of like a desperate attempt to come up with something for next season, and both of which will end up being a little bit disappointing.
Yeah, I will say, first of all, congratulations to both Presti and Morey for going for it. You know me, I love it when teams go for it. So
yeah, it's awesome. It'll be a lot of fun.
Fantastic for off-season philosophical discussions. Great job. But yes, I agree. There could be some hiccups, especially early. I'm a little bit more bullish on the Rockets pairing than I think you are. But that one probably has even just as much blow-up potential as Oklahoma City does. In terms of San Antonio, we sort of forecasted a kind of a quiet summer for them. That's how it's played out. They went and re-signed Patty Mills. Other than that, no major moves. I guess the way I would phrase it is this. I like Houston in a head-to-head playoff matchup with San Antonio more than I trust their ability to put up a higher regular season win total than San Antonio, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, that does make a lot of sense. Of course, I mean, we said that coming into this year's Rockets Spurs series, and it all fell apart. So wait and see. Because the other thing is, the Rockets front court, like, they don't really have options up there. It's PJ Tucker, Ryan Anderson, and Nene, and Clint Capella. Like, it's kind of a skeleton of a roster, and we keep saying, like, well, we'll see what Morey does. I don't know how much more he can do. But speaking of GMing and the way Twitter reacts to things, the hosannas for Patrick Patterson.
I knew you were gonna bring this up.
Fucking come on. Like, Patrick Patterson is not a good basketball player. I've watched Patrick Patterson for 5 years. Waiting for him to turn the corner and be the like stretchy four that everyone thinks he is, and it just was amazing to me. Everyone, like, Presti got him for what, $15 million, which was a good deal, especially relative to the prices of big men last summer, which it's sort of a different conversation. I think, like, now more than ever, it's clear that last summer, like, the NBA just had no idea what it was doing, but. Patrick Patterson is still Patrick Patterson. Like, everybody needs to take it down a notch on the, like, Sam Presti won the summer takes.
Yeah, there were a few causes for that excitement. Number one, Oklahoma City has been starved for shooting. I mean, imagine watching 82 games. If you're a fan of the Thunder and you watch all those bricks they were throwing up and all those guys who were afraid to shoot last year and all the times Westbrook just had to run into quadruple teams because there was nobody else out there, like, he is somewhat of a shooting threat. However, your point is very well taken. We didn't see a lot of people citing Patterson's playoff numbers last night. It's like, anytime you can get a guy, like, who played game 3 and 4 against Cleveland, 30 minutes total, and didn't make a single shot or score a single point, you really got to lock him up. He averaged in games 3 and 4, 1 rebound and 2 assists, 0 points. So yeah, like, it's not a steal at $6 million. I mean, he took that money for a reason.
It's like, he is a human. Yeah, and I love how every time a guy, like, the market just wasn't there for him, which is fine, but then it becomes like, yeah, he just really wanted to play for a winner, and this was that, it's just really important to him. I don't know, man. I don't know how many teams were, like, going out of their way to sign Patrick Patterson. The Raptors probably would have. But they're capped out. I mean, what do you think of Toronto's summer
right now?
Yeah, I think
what happened to him is his market dried up once Toronto decided to run it back with Ibaka and Lowry. Because once you keep both those guys, everybody else starts to become expendable. You see PJ Tucker go early. I mean, people were kind of picking at those quality role players in Toronto because they knew they weren't going to be able to pay all of them, right? And for Patterson, he does make the most sense on a contender if he can pull his game together in the postseason. I mean, that's the kind of guy, you know, big plus minus star, does a little bit of everything, doesn't dominate the ball, can play off things, can, you know, defend multiple positions, you know, can shoot it when left wide open. I mean, those things are going to be very helpful in Oklahoma City, there's no doubt. But this is not to set the world on fire, like you're saying that Twitter was kind of making it out to be.
Yeah, it was one of those things where it was just like, I saw one too many respected national basketball writer say, like, man, I can't believe Sam Presti got Patrick Patterson. And then I saw some Wizards fans being like, well, why didn't Ernie Grunfeld get Patrick Patterson? Like, there are a lot of what ifs with Wizards off seasons over the last few years. I'm not Patrick Patterson is not high on my list. Like, he's a worse version of Markieff Morris. Like, we're straight. It's fine. I'll take Jason Smith.
Yeah. Well, to your question about Toronto, though, it could have been a lot worse. And they're sort of emblematic of one of the big trends we've seen this summer, which is those 5-year deals, unless you're really bad at your job like Dell Demps. I mean, those 5-year deals just pretty much disappeared, right? And so you're getting a lot of these vets, even proven vets, coming in on 3-year deals, sometimes coming in on 2 years plus an option. And for Toronto, that's a fantastic trend, because the whole time I was justifying re-signing Kyle Lowry, and I'm sure you heard me say this over and over, which was, oh, just give him all the money. You can trade him to the Knicks halfway through the deal. Well, now you don't even need to trade him to a dumb franchise like the Knicks halfway through the deal, because the deal is going to be over halfway through the deal. You know, they only signed him for three. It's a big number, but the Kyle Lowry deal fits, makes him the highest paid player on the team in terms of average annual value, which is what he should be. I mean, he should make more than DeRozan. He's more important than DeRozan. But it wasn't a complete break the bank number. They did have to part with a few of the guys around the edges, but they're going to keep their core intact. And that allows them to talk themselves into, you know, a race at the three seed next year. That's a lot better than so many of these other pitiful teams in the Eastern Conference in terms of the hope and the hype factor. I think it would have been a big mistake, big miscalculation to walk away from one of those guys, especially when you could bring both Lowry and Ibaka back on three-year deals. I don't love either one of them. You know, I think it's kind of funny to refer to those two guys and DeRozan as a big three. I mean, just, you know, it's a little too much. But hey.
Look, man, the bar is lowered across the East right now. So we just got it. We're grading on a curve.
It's a AAA
yeah,
big three.
I'm with you. I think it's exactly. AAA super team. I'm with you, though. Given the landscape for the Raptors, I think coming back with three-year deals for those guys is actually kind of a big win, because it would have, I mean, if you're walking away, you can't really blow it up with what they have right now, and you also, you don't want to give 5 years to Kyle Lowry and 5 years and 160 or 70 million or whatever it would have been. And this is just sort of like a saner outcome for everyone involved. And I think you're right that we're going to probably get 2 years down the line, and it's not going to make sense to continue with that third year, and they can start to move guys and start to rebuild, which is not a bad outcome. You know, like, I think that if Masai can sort of plan for that rather than having it sprung on him, like in the first week of July, then I think it'll probably end up working out better for Toronto in the long run.
I guess the one concern I have with this whole plan is still just Dwayne Casey's role in all of it. It did start to seem like, and I'm a Casey defender, I think, you know, he's done an amazing job there. I guess I just thought that they had passed the point of tuning him out, right? Or like giving him their best effort, or him being able to get through and motivate those guys. And so now you're keeping the same veteran core. These guys are coming back on huge guaranteed deals. The time for them to sort of not revolt, but maybe tune out a little bit, or continue tuning out, would certainly be next season. And so, you know, if your plan is to bring everybody back, including the coach, I mean, to me, that sets up, you know, that could be a little fireworks, I think, come fall.
Okay. Well, listen, let's do four more teams. We've been kind of scattered today. We're still sort of shaking off the cobwebs after the holiday. Let's do four more teams. We're coming back with a mailbag later in the week on Friday. But I want to talk about the Warriors. I want to talk about the Wolves. I want to talk about the Nuggets, and I want to talk about the Sixers. So we could do those in any order you want.
Well, let's just do the Warriors quick, because there's not a lot to say. They're the biggest winners of the summer. They won again. And I think if you're really giving out who should be GM of the year next season, it should be Bob Myers again. I mean, I hate to say it, but the rich got richer. Taking care of Steph early, taking care of Steph early was a no-brainer. Somehow Kevin Durant, being like the most generous person since Mother Teresa, didn't see that coming. That's a huge help. And they took care of Iguodala and Livingston together on very, very reasonable contracts. Maybe you overpaid a million or two to keep Iguodala, but that was their biggest question. And they solved it by, you know, July 2nd or July 3rd. And now they're just playing this game of like, you know, which reclamation project can we bring on to give Steve Kerr the most joy, you know?
It's so upsetting, because I think the problem is that the Warriors are naturally smarter than everyone. Like when the Heat had LeBron, Bosh, and Wade, Pat Riley is great at landing superstars. It was not really that interested in working the end of the roster. And the flip side is Golden State, where they're fucking great at working all these little moves at the end of the roster that, like, I mean, I don't know if Omri Caspi, this is another one in the Patrick Patterson category where like basketball Twitter lost its mind when Caspi signed up there. But Caspi's a smart gamble for them, fits a lot of what they want to do. And if they go get Nick Young, like that, and then they've got Pat McCaw, they've got Jordan Bell, like it's just upsetting that Bob Myers is so good at his job and he's already like working with a winning hand here, and this could he could really like extend this out an extra couple years because he's just that like clever in the margins.
Yeah, and part of it again is maybe we shouldn't give all the credit to the organization or the management, and it's like talent attracts talent, right? I mean, when you play as well and as entertaining as these guys have played over these last couple of years, when you know you're just going to be cakewalking through a season and it's going to be as fun, and then on top of that you know that your coach can't help himself and he just always plays every single person on his roster no matter what. Like if you're a player like Nick Young or Caspi or whoever, what is the downside? You know, like you're not going to ever be asked to do too much. You're going to get a real role. You're not going to be wasting your time and you're going to have the best year of your life, you know, period. I mean, all these guys are going to look back at this run, either last season, you know, three seasons ago as the greatest times of their entire lives. There's no doubt about it. I mean, you can just see Steph Curry with his signature cigar that he totes around everywhere now at 60 years old, you know, in the barbershop telling people about the amazing run of 2015, 16, 17,
telling
18,
people
19.
About Omri Caspi.
Yeah. And so it's just not fair. And I can understand a lot of teams. That's why I think we really should give credit to Maury and Presti for going for it, because so many GMs, the natural reaction would be like, are you kidding me? They got him for that price? Forget it. Like Kevin Durant's giving them the $25 million back in luxury tax savings? Forget it. Like we can't keep up with that. And I always appreciate the GMs who aren't quitting, who aren't punting because they're facing this behemoth.
Yeah. Let me tell you something. Nick Young on the Warriors will get me on the Golden State bandwagon because – nothing was amusing about JaVale on the Warriors to me because I just don't like JaVale. I never liked him when he was in DC. People around the team were not huge fans of him, and he's just kind of like he's lame. Nick Young, on the other hand, was just a delight to be around and is like a delightful human. And it would be great to have him in Golden State. And I'm serious. That would be that's all I need to bring me over to the Warriors for next year.
Well, surprise, surprise.
The other thing we should talk about.
I feel the exact opposite. I think Nick Young has serious potential
to ruin
the Warriors.
The thing, fuck off. The thing is, Nick Young, it's not an act. It's not like none of it is like shtick for the internet. Like that's exactly how he is in real life, and that's what I appreciate about him.
Well,
whereas JaVale he's not that way. Like in private, he's kind of like aloof and dickish. But it just so. Shout out to Nick Young. Let's get him out to the bay. Let's make
what
this
I appreciate
happen.
About him is that there's like a legitimate chance that the NBA record books are going to be like Will Chamberlain 100 points, Nick Young 74 points, Devin Booker 70 points. Like, I mean, he's the kind of person who could go completely insane in that system where it's just catch and shoot and just be like the super poor man's Clay.
I would also, I mean, Nick Young on the Wolves would also be a win for me. So I could go either way on that one. Should we talk about KD giving money back? It seemed like that was a controversy for about 12 hours. To me, it was really bizarre to see a lot of people saying like he was letting down the players giving money back. I mean, it was just good business for him to say, look, this is a great situation for me and for my brand. And I hate talking about basketball that way, but like, if you're Durant, like you gotta look at this and say, it's worth it for me to give $10 million back now while I'm also collecting like ungodly amounts of money from Nike every year, and to just sort of see this out and have faith that this is going to be great for me over the next 5 to 10 years.
I was wondering how much of that generosity was motivated by him never wanting to be accused of being the guy who broke the team up. Like, for example, remember during the playoffs we started talking about, oh, they might have to trade Klay Thompson here in a year or two. Oh, that stuff's starting to percolate. There is a scenario where if Durant's on the books for the most money he can possibly get, running up the luxury tax as high as it could possibly go for Golden State, where like they do have to make some real choices here in the future. I think by doing this now, it's actually kind of like a preemptive strike against being the guy who gets blamed for it. Like, if they do trade Klay,
it's also, you're right,
it's
you're
a smart
right.
self.
He probably wants to look selfless. Yeah. And so much of what Durant has been doing for the last like year has been weird PR motivated, and
it's a smart self-preservation.
Having
though,
said that,
I
though,
think, and it was a big sacrifice. I mean, we should not like gloss over guys in their primes who are that good. Don't give those kinds of gigantic discounts. That's just not something that happens in the NBA ever. If he's 34, okay, that could happen, but not at this point of his career. I think your point about how he's making up the income in other ways, whether it's his own happiness or his off-court endorsement stuff, is a very valid point. But I think also he now has put a little bit of pressure here on Golden State Warriors ownership, because the luxury tax bills are coming. The repeater tax bills are coming. You look at Cleveland like this summer, they're rumored to trade Shumpert. I mean, the whole point of that trade would be to just get off as much money as possible, cut the tax bill. Mickey Arison, you know, famously, you know, Mike Miller, you know, gets on LeBron's bad side because he cuts Mike Miller. If Golden State eventually has to go down that route, and it could be something as simple as like, look, Pat McCaw, like you outgrew us. You know, we don't have enough money to pay you. You became too good. Durant, by doing this sort of early, has kind of laid the seeds in, to tell those guys, look, you better be taking care of Draymond when he's a free agent. You better take care of Klay. You better take care of these other role players who are, you know, coming together. You better not just trade Andre Iguodala in 2 years as a salary dump if these guys are still performing at a championship level. And so from that reason, he could be playing chess.
It's true. It also could be that he's signaling to them, let's all take $5 to $10 to $15 million less and keep this going. The other thing that's funny is we talked a lot about like KD and Steph power struggles and who wasn't getting enough credit. Steph got his $200 million. So I was happy about that. Like, Steph didn't take a dime off that $201 million.
Nor should he.
And that's the way it should be.
And that was the thing too, is I kind of imagined it playing out like someone just kind of told KD, like, did you know that Steph was making like $11, $12 million these last 4 years? And KD's head just like exploding and being like, are you serious? Like, is that really what his salary was? And then just being like, no. Pay everything. Like, give Steph every dollar. Like, that's ridiculous. You know, can't you see that happening?
Yeah. Well, it was just good business for Durant. That's the thing that, like, we had a bunch of, it's sort of amateur economists pop up and say why this is a bad thing for the players. But look, if you're going to have max salaries for superstars, then like, I'm surprised that this is the first time it's happened where guys have taken less. I mean, I know like the LeBron, Wade, and Bosh guys, they all took a couple million dollars less to make it work, but this is like a sizable pay cut. And it's smart for Durant, and I wonder whether other guys are going to start doing similar things. Granted, there are only a couple stars who are getting like $30 million checks from shoe companies every year to sort of supplant their NBA income, but Durant's one of them.
Remember, there's another big one too, though.
Chris Paul makes sense.
I mean, Chris Paul really did the same thing by opting in. He punted a lot of guaranteed money early, and we said previously he can get that money back. And so can Durant. I mean, Durant can potentially get that money back down the road, but that's still a big financial give back or delay that shouldn't be overlooked. So, yeah, guys maybe are starting to try to do this, and it puts everybody in a tough position because, you know, LeBron came out a few years ago. He's like, I'm done sacrificing, and he didn't even, you know, sacrifice that much. I mean, you know, it was like a couple percentage off his contract in Miami to make sure that they could all get there together. This certainly dwarfs that. And now if you're LeBron, it kind of puts you in an awkward position of like, if you're trying to put together the next super team somewhere, how much are you willing to give back? Are you still stuck on having every single dollar you can possibly be paid? Because if so, Golden State has kind of outflanked you on that front by being able to keep all this talent together. So I don't know. I think it really, it's almost like it pushes the ball back in LeBron's court, Kevin, doing this.
One more KD Warriors note. So I'm up in New England and with family, and the last time we recorded a podcast here was, or when I was here, was like June 30th of last year, and it was right before free agency, and the possibility of Durant to the Warriors, both you and I were pretty dismissive
for
of
sure.
it, and you brought it up at the end of the podcast, and I was just like, get out of here. That would be so lame. We don't even need to talk about it. It's so ridiculous that we shouldn't even acknowledge it. And so anyone who wants to go back 365 days and listen to us poo-poo the Warriors thing and me basically be like, I mean, to my credit, I felt exactly the same way last June that I did throughout the playoffs this year, that it was just completely whack. But I am now warming up to the idea, because now at least the Warriors are so good that we could just kind of put them off in the corner and talk about the rest of the league as if like next year is kind of like a foregone conclusion that they're going to win. And I kind of prefer that than pretending that teams like the Rockets or the Spurs have like a real shot against them.
Yeah, I mean, kudos to you for consistently reaching the wrong conclusion. That's impressive. I remember it. I don't remember the specifics of that conversation, but no, you were the whole way. You were like, this better not happen. We should jump here. I think we should talk about the Nuggets, because you're saying, let's talk about some of these other teams that aren't the Warriors and what does it mean for them? They're a team that's been a backwater for 4 or 5 years, right? I mean, we basically never talk about the Nuggets. If we do, it's to kind of make fun of them and say how they're not going anywhere. And you pretend to be a fan of theirs and pretend to watch their League Pass games. But we know they're, you know, you're not really night in, night out, like checking in on the Moody Struggle Show.
My League Pass habits all come back to my fantasy basketball team. And I picked up Gary Harris in December and really rode that train all the way to a title. So yes, I was in on the Nuggets. Don't second guess my fandom. But yeah, I'm all in. I wish they had signed George Hill. I still worry about the point guard position. I think Jamal Murray, another guy I had on and off throughout the year on my fantasy team, but he was like, he had flashes where he looked great, and I feel like a lot of people in Denver just sort of decided that he's a future superstar, but he had a lot of games where he just never got rolling, and granted, they didn't really like turn over the starting spot to him until like the final 2-3 weeks of the season, and I know also like Jokic is supposed to be the guy that they run the offense through. But like, you need a better veteran in the backcourt. And that's why like I'm really excited about the Millsap deal, but I'm also kind of worried that this is a big move that is not going to actually move the needle for them that much in that like the murder conference, where like I think if you put the Nuggets in the East, they're probably like a top four seed.
Yeah, they're unfortunately still a sideshow in the show. Let's say this. Do you think landing Paul Millsap was the best day of Tim Connelly's life? I mean, because that guy, he's kind of been a punchline on the show, at least for me. You know, I've always kind of beat up on some of his failed pursuits, and they've never gotten anybody. They've been so bad since he took over for Masai. That was a big get, landing Paul Millsap. That was one of my bold predictions before free agency started, that they were going to get somebody. I kind of thought it was going to be Kevin Love there for a little bit, but I loved the mirroring yeah. of like Kevin Love's not quite what he was when he was in trade rumors and he couldn't get you Klay Thompson, so now he can't get you Gary Harris. Like, I loved that mirroring was taking place. Just shows like kind of the diminishment of his reputation. But Millsap's a perfect fit. There's no question about it. Four or five is going to look great.
So
and
this
then,
is,
again,
this is why it's such a win. Like you mentioned the Love talks. I would not have really liked Love on that team. Like, they didn't need what Love does well. And Millsap is one of the few guys in the league that you can put next to Jokic and have it really work. And I think, and also you don't have to give up Gary Harris. So, like, yeah, of course, it's a huge win for Tim Connelly. What was interesting to me is the longer we went, like, and particularly after the fact, when you look at some of the reports out of Atlanta, like, I'm not sure who they were even bidding against for Millsap.
Yeah, that's a good question. And I think that's part of the reason why they got pretty favorable terms. I mean, I think he's a better fit than Kevin Love. I think he's a better all-around player than Kevin Love. I think he's a better complement to Jokic. I think you didn't have to give up anything, as you just mentioned, and you didn't have to overpay. I mean, I think they got him at a really fair, reasonable price. I mean, very similar to Serge Ibaka's contract, actually a little bit bigger, but in terms of the guarantees and how that worked out, you know, it doesn't completely hamstring them. On top of that, like, you're not giving four or five, you know, you're not giving some crazy super long deal like maybe Atlanta would have had if they brought him back, or you kind of maybe expected that he would just get some 4-year max offer from an outside suitor. It came down far below that. So if you're Denver, why not? If they make the playoffs, you know, they're going to have a rally, or at least they should have a rally. They make the playoffs next year. And if they didn't do it, we're not even talking about them because they lose Gallo and they're just stuck, right? So I think it's a big win for relevance. It's a big win potentially for the standings. It's a very smart, targeted acquisition, and it makes so much more sense than the whole Dwayne Wade thing last summer, that it's like, hey, this group, this team, this organization pulled itself together, and they're going somewhere.
Yeah, and I guess if you're looking at the long term, you basically have to, and you're a Nuggets fan, you say, look, our plan is to hope that Jamal Murray does take that next step and become the superstar, or not. He doesn't even need to be a superstar, but basically like a star caliber guard who's going to get you 20 plus points a game in the backcourt. And Jokic becomes a legit superstar, which, like, he had nights. I mean, if you look at his minutes, he didn't play big minutes last year and was still crazy productive. So if he gets up to like 30, 35 minutes a game, who knows what he can do. And basically those two are the building blocks. And then Millsap is sort of like a bridge to whatever they can get in 2020. Is that what 100%. You see?
Yeah, the bridge is exactly the right word. And one thing I'd say about Murray, there aren't a lot of guys who I will just watch their like shooting videos on Instagram where it's just like, hey, I'm in a gym shooting. Murray, if you're not watching Jamal Murray's offseason workout shooting videos, you're missing out. I mean, he's not Steph level, but this guy has got such a natural, smooth shot. He can hit from really deep. It's a little bit intoxicating.
It's really true. A plus Instagram videos from Jamal Murray. And also, related is Jokic. I saw like a 45-second video of Jokic in a field in Eastern Europe, like pushing a tire down a 100-yard field, and he was doing it so slowly that I think it was posted to look impressive, like, oh, look at Jokic putting in work in the offseason. But I watched it being like, man, like, that doesn't actually look that impressive.
Good Lord, dude. I'd love to see you push a tire. Give me a break. See, well, people like you are why Lou Williams comes out bloggers, man. If you're out here sitting in front of, okay, you're at Cape Cod right now on a beach looking at your phone saying, oh, I could push that tire through Serbia. Get out of here, dude.
No, honestly. Yo, full disclosure, I biked like 18 miles this morning, which is not something I normally do. And immediately, as soon as I got off the bike, I was like, man, my back is killing me. And realized that it was a bad idea to sort of like crank it up a notch this morning. But it's all in the game. And look, Jokic is the best. I like him because he's not a good athlete. So that's not a complaint. Yeah, all in on the Nuggets. We should come back Friday and talk about we should talk about the Sixers, the Wolves. My Kings made some moves, bringing in Zebo as the veteran presence. I kind of like it. We've got a lot to get through on Friday. This was sort of like a preliminary, just sort of roundup. But yeah, man, I mean, like, This has been a wild couple of days. My brain is still a little bit scrambled. Yeah,
everyone can tell because you didn't even mention the name Otto Porter once this entire show. So that's great news for our listeners.
Man, I'm so mad. We got so close to nobody giving him the max. I didn't think Brooklyn was going to come up with the money, but as far as the Wizards are concerned, it's still like a no-brainer for them to match, and I don't understand why. There have been a couple reports making this sound dramatic, like they are definitely going to match.
Yeah, they should. I mean, they really, really should. I don't know. I think that we pretty much covered the biggest stories for the first 4 days. Guys, send in your questions, openfloormail@gmail.com. Again, openfloormail@gmail.com. We've been getting some wild ones. We got some drunk stories, allegedly Joel Embiid in a bar somewhere. We got other questions about sort of the future of how the NBA game is going to play out. Who are these contenders? Some of the questions that you're talking about in terms of power balance, Eastern-Western Conference dynamics. We've just got a lot of really interesting questions. So if you've got any more, send them in. openfloormail@gmail.com. You can always send them to my Twitter DMs as well.
All right, man. I will talk to you Friday, and we'll go from
all
there.
Right. Stay off the bike.
This has been a digital media production. Find your voice.
Another great edition of Open Floor is in the books. Did you know Locked On has a daily podcast for all 30 NBA teams? If you're a Lakers fan, search Locked On Lakers. A Celtics fan, search Locked On Celtics. Warriors fans, search Locked On Warriors. Yes, all 30 NBA teams have a daily bite-sized podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team.
It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.